This is TC Daily, the new technology show brought to you by Tech Central. I'm Duncan McLeod. If you haven't subscribed to the show yet, please do so. You can do so on YouTube at youtube.com/TechCentral, or you can subscribe to our daily newsletter. You can get that via techcentral.co.za/newsletter, the show where we talk to interesting people in the technology industry and beyond. And I have just one such guest today who's joining me, and that's Winston Yordan, who is the MD of a company called Gridcars. And they are rolling out a national network of charging stations for electric vehicles. This is going to be a fascinating discussion. Welcome, Winston.
Thank you very much.
I was having a look at your LinkedIn profile before we started chatting today, and you have a diverse range of interests ranging from aviation to evolving technologies to flying cars and hovercraft. And you were telling me that while you were at school, you were trying to build, or you wanted to build a flying car.
Oh, yes. So very much, you know, I spent large portions of my time at school trying to design flying cars, and sort of over the years came to the point where I realized, you know, the area I'd have to go into would be physics, not engineering necessarily, if I really wanted to get the design right. So that's really what drove my studies and drove where I went to. Once I got to university, I probably took my foot off the throttle a little bit and focused really on getting my degrees. But, it was fascinating. I really enjoyed the flying side of things and where the flying car technology would go. And I think for me, it was about how it's going to change the world in the sense that there'd be a lot of fractional ownership systems in place. There'd be, you know, rental systems. You'd have autonomous flying because you'd be able to send the car to fetch your kids at school, mm-hmm. you know, things like that. So I think it was those side things that really always interested me, and still to this day, right. is ensuring that there's the correct infrastructure is in place in order for the technology to thrive on that mm-hmm. and to grow on that.
Flying cars are interesting because I when you were at school, I guess this was a very futuristic thing.
Oh, very, yeah.
In the last few years, companies are actually starting to look at flying cars as a concept quite seriously.
Yeah.
Uber's got is investing in the space, and many other companies.
Absolutely.
Do you think we're actually going to see flying cars in our cities anytime soon?
I think the legislation is still something big to overcome. It always was. And also any type of flying car, even the ones that we were looking at the time, or the designs we were looking at the time, they really need special places to land. You can't just land it in a driveway. It's going to shoot stones and sandblast everything on all sides. So it's like a land in a helicopter. You've got the same amount of down thrust of air that's going to hit the roads. So I think it's going to be difficult to find the right things. I think in the right applications, if you're talking, you know, power line monitoring and things like that, that's also very much where our discussions went to eventually was saying that would be the direction. So, yeah, I was doing this in, let's say, the 80s and the 90s, and, you know, we built, we would just call it a four-engine balancing system, but mm-hmm. really it's what the drone technology is used today around,
right.
you know, that in terms of being able to fly a particular,
right.
the aircraft.
So when these flying cars do come, are they just going to be big drones?
I think so. I think the ones we'll see now, I don't think there's any technology that we're expecting that is going to, you know, not create these massive downwashes. It just practically is not there.
Right.
So I think they'd have to have special places to land. You might find vertiports, or that's what we call them. So you might find a vertiport at a shopping center, but it would be far away with a very specific design to be able to suppress that amount of wind hitting the mm-hmm. ground and not create a problem in the area.
Okay. Well, you know, we're going to talk about vehicles of a different kind today, and that's also quite an exciting area, and that's EVs. Which just seem to be starting to take off now in South Africa. A lot of the big vehicle manufacturers are starting to invest money. We've seen Mercedes-Benz announcing some new EVs. We had the CEO just on this last week to talk about the new models they're launching in the market. Yeah. Audi's doing stuff. Volvo's doing stuff. There's a lot of interest in investment happening. And I think consumers are starting to warm to the idea as well. So let's talk a bit about Gridcars and the background to Gridcars. I know that the business today forms part of the JSE-listed Alviva Holdings stable.
Right. Yeah.
I know they own a business called SolarF.
That's right.
What is the connection? Does SolarF own Gridcars? What's the...
So SolarF is 75% shareholder in Gridcars, mm-hmm. and they're also majority owned by the listed company.
Okay.
So that puts us into that listed realm. It's been an amazing ride for us. Unofficially, Gridcars started in probably at the time I was finishing my work with flying cars in about 2002 and started looking initially at designing vehicles. So mm-hmm. it was a vehicle design strategy in the beginning. But around 2010, that transitioned towards charging and charging technology. To maybe put that in perspective, that was 5 years before the first EVs arrived in South Africa commercially.
2009 was a long time ago in the context of EVs, for sure.
Absolutely. So the idea was, at that point, we realized that we'd need to be focusing on building infrastructure for EVs, and that infrastructure included the management systems, the billing systems, the mapping data that sits behind all of this information, the communication things. Again, very much similar to the type of things I looked at on the flying car side of things.
Right.
So that really brought that to fruition for us, is to bring those technologies together and to start engaging with the bigger OEMs to understand what are they looking for, how will those mapping systems integrate into their vehicles so that you can have a seamless transition. That you look up something on your phone, you say, I want to go to Cape Town, you get into the car, and the car would automatically be plotting the points for you as to where you've got to go, how long you've got to spend in each. The newer systems have been so amazing in some of the latest cars, where they'll actually tell you how long, you know, what your state of charge will be when you arrive at the charging station, and how long you've got to spend there, you know, to minimize your time along the trip. So it's absolutely amazing.
Amazing. I guess as a consumer, you don't really think about the logistics that have to sit in the back end. But now that you mention it, it must be a really complicated exercise.
Absolutely.
And probably made doubly complicated by the fact that we're in a power short country. There's a shortage of electricity in South Africa. There's frequent load shedding. How do you cope with the load shedding issue?
So I suppose the first thing to say is, if there's load shedding, the charger's not working. There's no magic. We don't have batteries, you know, necessarily at a site. That said, when sites have their own backup capabilities, whether those backups are through battery or through generator, we are sometimes connected to that. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the chargers, you can actually look when you go into the mapping, one of the features you'll see is whether it's got backup.
Right.
And, you know, especially the major highways, if you look at even a small town like Lanesburg, you know, they've got a big generator that would support the site where we were installed. And if there's load shedding, we're on the generator in that case. So yes, it's not the cleanest, but at the end of the day, it's convenient.
Yeah.
You know, if we look at actual charging sessions, it's like 0.2% or 0.3% that were charged on generators. Mm-hmm. So it's a small fraction. Yeah. It's really not a big deal at all. But I can tell you that 0.2% of people that were charged in the generator were immensely thankful.
I'm sure.
Because they now, and I think that comes back to then the first statement, that if it is down, on average, load shedding is 2 hours, so on average, you're going to wait an hour.
Going to have some lunch.
You know, an hour. It's not a big deal. Yeah. And I think most EV drivers will tell you that they've had very few real problems with load shedding, you know, in affecting your driving or your drivability. Mm. You know, that said, and I won't mention his name, but we had one client this week who just hit the perfect storm, where he'd forgotten a cable at home, so he couldn't charge on the AC side of the charger. The charger had actually incurred some damage like the day before, and he skipped a charger with the rule is charge at every charging station.
Right.
But he skipped one, so when he got there, he was absolutely empty.
Oh no!
And he had to spend the night. But that's the second time that's happened in 4 years. Mm. So you do get these perfect storms, but it's really in general we do not see it as a big challenge for the customers.
It's been said that one of the biggest challenges to EV adoption in South Africa is range anxiety. Do you find that, I mean, just talking to your clients, talking to drivers of EVs in South Africa, once they've, you know, bought an EV and been driving it for a while, do you find that range anxiety is still there, or does it dissipate?
So partially part of what you say is true. Range anxiety is the biggest issue, but it's not when talking to EV owners. It's in talking to prospective EV owners.
Right.
So EV owners, I've never met one that suffers from range anxiety. The cars are very communicative. The cars tell you where to charge. They redirect you if you're running short. Mm. They tell you what range you've got. Most EV drivers, or all EV drivers, would also know that if you're driving and you halve your speed, you'll triple your range. You know, it's that sort of dynamic. So people learn that very quickly. I've had one or two times where driving on a big highway and I'm heading into Colesberg and I can see, oops, I was pushing the speed a little bit hard now and I've spent a bit too much on my battery, and I must back off, and I back off to 90 for 15 minutes and I make it, because it does that thing. So the EV drivers themselves really understand and sort of are one with their cars.
Yeah, yeah.
The people who haven't yet had the car, there's a lot of concern about range. Mm-hmm. But it really is dispelled very quickly once you start driving an EV, and once you actually get out there and test those ranges, get a feel for your car.
Yeah.
And you very quickly realize it's not such a big deal.
Interesting.
The cars help you, and you know what to do.
So give me an idea of how big this network is today. You've been rolling it out for some. When did the first charging point go in?
So the first, we put chargers in from 2013 already.
Wow.
So there would have been the smaller AC type chargers and, you know, at various places. But the first big, so Gridcar was in 2017 when we had the acquisition through Alviva, mm-hmm. through SolarF and Alviva. At that point, the decision was taken to actually drive, at the very least, the first network in the country. We thought, because everybody was always saying, what if I want to drive to Cape Town? And you can't bring cars until these charging stations. And we just felt the quickest way to solve this problem is just put chargers down.
Mm-hmm.
So when people say, But what if you want to go to Cape Town? So we're getting your car and go to Cape Town. And when they say, but you can't bring cars because there's not chargers. No, there's plenty of chargers. Bring cars. You know, so we sort of decided to do that from I think for the good of the industry, but really to try and get this thing sparked and get it going.
Okay.
So the first DC fast chargers, which were part of that program, were in 2018.
Okay.
And, you know, to date, if you're looking at the DC fast chargers in public spaces and the highways, I think we're up at about 75, 80 of them. And that's really opened up all the major highways. So the N1, the N2, the N3, and the N4 mostly covered 100 kilometer to 200 kilometer gaps. So
we're talking Joburg, Durban, Joburg, Cape Town, Joburg, Nelspruit.
Joburg, Rustenburg, and then Cape Town, East London on the N2.
Oh, yes.
And we're in discussions now with closing the gap from East London through to Durban as well on the N2. So all of these areas have been exposed. We haven't done the N14 yet, but again, discussions are happening. There's people looking at how we're going to approach that one. When you're doing something like the N14, you're going to put a charger down in Upington and maybe see one charging session every 6 months. It's not about profitability, but it's about coverage.
Yeah.
And it's about opening up those areas that people can start to feel they can go there. You know, and some people will go there just because they can. So we'll start to see those sort of dynamics. And yeah, so.
Oh, the prediction, I mean, Mark Rain, the CEO of Mercedes-Benz, predicted on the show just last week that 50% of their sales will be EVs by the end of 2026, which is a pretty aggressive rollout. So if that transpires, then there's probably going to be quite a bit of demand along the N14 route.
We honestly believe that. As I say, there's a time. You've got to allow the fleet to grow.
Sure.
But people won't start going that direction if there's no chargers.
Yeah.
I was talking to a shopping center at one stage, and they said, we'd like to put a DC charger down. And they said to me, but we've never seen an EV here. So I said, yeah, EVR drivers are not stupid. They're fairly clever people. They have apps that tell them where the chargers are, so they don't come here because there are no chargers here. Okay, so we put the charger in, and today it's the second busiest charger in the country.
Interesting.
You know, so build it and they will come, I think is the strategy, and we've really put that out there. So we're well ahead with charging infrastructure ratio to vehicles in the country. We're well ahead in South Africa. I think it's going to be tough to stay ahead, as though, you know, Mark has got some really great predictions on where they're going to go. And, you know, I'm excited to see that. If all of the other OEMs have similar strategies, then there are going to be a lot of cars in this country in the next 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And we will start to see that growth curve moving very, very fast.
So where are these chargers primarily on the national routes? Are they at filling stations, near filling stations, or... I mean, I know you're deploying shopping centers as well, but if I'm driving from here to Cape Town, where am I actually going to see these points?
Most of them are going to be at filling stations. Some of them at hotels, some of them at malls, just depends on where they are. Bloemfontein is a casino, so casino and hotel. It depends. Obviously, on the open roads, your best places are the bigger filling stations.
Right.
So, you know, that have got, because you're going to be there for an hour, you need to understand that. You need to know, is there good food? Do they make good coffee? So always looking for sites that have the better coffee franchises. And you can find a place to sit. And we're starting to see more and more. We were talking to a fuel station development company recently, and they said that they're starting to build fuel stations now where the shops are a lot bigger and there's going to be shared office space. So places where you can sit down and have a meeting. You know, all those sort of things, because they're foreseeing that that'll become one of the requirements.
Oh, fascinating.
At a fuel station. You're here for an hour. You're going to want to catch up on your email and plug your computer in.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think we'll start to see more and more of these transitions happening.
Fascinating. So changing consumer behavior as a result.
Absolutely. Oh, responding to the consumer's need to what they have.
Yeah. So it's interesting that, that an independent company like Gridcars is rolling out this infrastructure nationwide. Do you think that, and I know you're working with a lot of the car manufacturers as well. Do you expect the car manufacturers to build their own networks? Do you expect companies like Shell and BP and Engen, et cetera, to eventually start to transform their garage forecourts as well?
It's a very interesting question, and I think it's going to be yes to all of those. We're going to see the OEMs investing to some extent into infrastructure. I don't think the OEMs believe that this is their way going forward. I mean, they don't own roads. Yeah. They don't build roads. They expect the road to be there. But I'm pretty sure that in the very early days of the automotive industry, they've instigated and funded and put money towards roads to make them better for their vehicles.
Yes.
So that's why I say I do believe they'll get involved. The fuel stations, absolutely, they're going to see a diminishing market in the fuel side, and they need to look at ways of picking up that uptake on the charging side and other services that they're going to be doing. So from a fuel station, absolutely, they should be looking at it. But I do think we're going to see a bit of a modal shift that's going to be towards shopping centers, business parks. Mm-hmm. You know, because the idea is because you're charging a bit longer, you probably want sites where you're anyway there for a longer period, which is not normally a fuel station. So I think there's going to be a bit of a move towards that. But on strategic sites and on the highways, the fuel stations are the way, because they already have a great site which has got good amenities at the site, good services, all those sort of things.
Okay. But for forward-looking entrepreneurs and business owners, perhaps in smaller towns in Karoo, could actually look at this as a business opportunity.
I completely agree.
All this traffic coming down the highway, the guys are going to have to charge for 45 minutes. Why not put one outside our restaurant, for example?
I think it's exactly what it is. And also, you don't have all these environmental challenges that you have when you're going to put down a fuel station.
Yes.
You know, so that's a much more complex process. This is something you can make the decision of, you know, there is power. That's probably the biggest question you have to ask. And you can put it down in 3 days.
Do you need a certain type of power? Do you need permission from the municipality?
You need a certain level of power. And if you would need to involve the municipality if you didn't have enough power.
Okay.
So if your site doesn't have the power, you'd need to look at, you'd have to take a typical shopping center as an example.
Yep.
They might well have enough power for one or two charges. If you want to put 10 charges down, they're probably going to have to upgrade the transformer.
Right.
Now you'd have to bring the municipality into the discussion. The other part of those discussions we would have is looking then at an energy strategy for those malls to say, how do we put down maybe some solar and help to support that network for you? But at some point, it's going to revert to, let's get City Power in and have a discussion around putting down a bigger transformer because we now need the bigger numbers.
Yeah.
So there is going to be an evolution, transformation of the network, of the charging network or the power network. I would hope for the good. I think a more resilient network that's going to help to build that and grow that industry.
And I imagine a large shopping center would make sense to deploy these as well, because of when there is load shedding, these facilities tend to have massive generator backups as well that could continue.
Or just solar.
Or solar.
Solar during the day. I mean, generator maybe at night is a bit more important, but during the day, just a good solar system would support your charging.
Yeah. Is it feasible to use solar to charge vehicles, on the highways, for example?
Yeah.
Could you, how much solar array would you have to put down next to a charging station?
So on a big charger, a lot. Mm-hmm. So I think, yes, that's a very good question. I suppose the way to look at it is a typical filling station might need 100 kilowatts of solar. A big charger that we put down today is 180 kilowatts. Mm-hmm. So it's already more than double what the filling station would have. So they would have to scale a bit further. But our view is design your solar for the site, including the charger as part of that load.
Right.
But don't try and design solar to cater for all the load at the charge point.
Okay.
Because you'd need a lot more usage. 3 or 4 years from now, probably a very different discussion, because then I think we'll have 5 chargers at a site and 3 of them will always be busy.
Mm.
And then you can start to make better decisions around letting the solar or letting the charger dictate the load to the solar.
Right.
That you can start to balance that.
So, absolutely. I'm just thinking that, around filling stations on the highways, there's usually a lot of vacant land, usually farmland or something similar that could potentially be used for solar farms to power that infrastructure.
And I would, for a big part of what I'd like to see as well is how those become the spark of the reason why you put in solar, but in actual fact, that solar can then be supporting the grid in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So you could then be supporting that town or whatever environment or communities in that area can start to also get support from that solar system.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be, we'll see that sort of effect rolling on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, where the charging, we say, oh, okay, but we need more power. Let's put down solar. Oh, but now we've got excess solar. Can we feed a bit back into the grid and support the network in this area?
Fascinating. Now, I know you've worked with some of the OEMs. I think there was an announcement just a few weeks ago that you'd signed an agreement with Audi South Africa, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah. What's the nature of that relationship, and what are some of the other deals you have with the OEMs?
So at this stage, I think we can comfortably say we work with all the OEMs.
Okay.
So we've got these different levels that we'd work with certain OEMs. So with BMW, for example, we manage their charging infrastructure for them. We work with their customers in terms of when their customers need to go to charging stations. With OEMs such as Mercedes, we're working with their dealers quite extensively. So helping the dealers to understand the transition mm-hmm. towards electrification, how they're going to manage their power. With Audi, it's mostly working with their customers charging at the public network. And then Audi has put quite a big commitment towards funding charging infrastructure and support. Well, let's just say it's the support of charging infrastructure. So they don't own the infrastructure. They just find incentive ways of actually driving incentives around getting that infrastructure going. So you'll see quite a lot of the chargers on the highways, I think, to date, 33 sites would have Audi branding on them, which would mean that they're carrying some sort of support from Audi. Okay.
Are all of these sites open access, if that's the right term? Can if I'm driving a BMW, can I charge at an Audi station?
Yes, you can. So there's no constraints.
Will it stay like that?
Yes.
Okay.
So there's no constraints on the things. Okay, let me correct that statement. So right now, there is no constraint in where you can charge.
Mm-hmm.
We have what are called roaming agreements. So if there's in the same way in the cell phone network, your cell phone can roam across other connections. It's exactly the same here. Even though other people may own the networks, there's roaming agreements between the operators of the funding or the finance side of it versus the owning of the actual charging infrastructure. So those two connect to each other. Similar to banking. So you can draw money from an ABSA ATM if you're a F&B client. And
there is a price premium for that. The SaaSwitch network, is there a price premium on?
So at this stage, there's not. Mm-hmm. In other words, that's absorbed by the owners of the infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably foreseeable that there'd be a very small margin that eventually does creep in for that. But generally, we're not seeing a differentiator at this stage.
Right.
So the roaming cost is carried by the network operators themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So as part of that. And normally, it's back-to-back agreements between whoever owns that infrastructure versus who's bringing the customer.
Right.
To the site.
Okay.
So definitely, there's no reason, however, why there can't be a differentiated network. So you could end up with, let's say a particular, and I'm going to use this maybe more in the commercial space, where a courier company looks and says, wait a minute, it's a bit expensive for us to charge in public.
Mm-hmm.
We'd rather put down our own charging infrastructure. And then those might be closed only to the courier using those or to that particular commercial operator using those. So we could see charges in the future that do that. What we try to do is ensure that the charges that are displayed inside of the vehicle is absolutely where you can use it. So if there were charges that you wouldn't have access to, it just wouldn't show inside of your vehicle. It wouldn't show in your app.
Yeah.
So you'd only see what you're capable of. So if you see a charger and it's not on my app, you know, maybe it's a private one. Maybe you can't use it. So, you know, you've got a great office park here, and you might put a charger against the wall, and it might be privately for yourselves to use, not for the general public to use.
Okay.
But if I got you and I come inside and I said, I need a charge, you might say, okay, it's fine. We can make it available to you.
Sure.
So there would be those sort of things that we'll see as the dynamic grows.
Yeah. Now,
the vast majority would be shared across everybody.
We don't see it in this country at the moment because the fuel price is not deregulated, although there's talk that's going to happen soon on some grades of petrol. But if you travel to the UK or the US, depending where you go, there's big hoardings outside garages saying, you know, this is the price of fuel per gallon or per liter or whatever it is at this location. And you usually find the further outside the city, the more remote the area, the higher the price. Is the same thing happening in electric?
Definitely. So the idea is that there is no price control at all. You would look and the reason why we don't believe there ever will be. And the reason is that a shopping center might look and say, we'll pay for the charging. We want you to come and charge for free here because you're spending your money at the restaurants and at all of the other facilities here. So we do see that scenario where often a restaurant would, or at least a shopping mall might look and say it's free.
Mm-hmm.
And if there was a particular area where you came and you got, when you stopped your car there, your car got washed, you got a voucher for coffee at the local restaurant, you might be prepared to pay a bit more for that slot. So therefore, the dynamic is going to be driven by other commercial aspects around that. So the owner of the charge point would look and say, this is my motivation for the price I'm doing.
Right.
You know, I'm in an area where we've got really expensive electricity, plus we're trying to keep our electricity green, so we run it off of batteries, and it's really expensive, and they might charge more. And certain EV drivers might look and say, but I'm quite happy to go there because I know I'm getting pure green electricity, and I'll pay a premium for that.
Yes.
So we're going to see these changes, or these dynamics in the industry. Right now, as grid cars, we try to keep a single price across the country. We don't, because the other thing that affects us is time of use. Mm. If we're in a very expensive time of use area, I could actually be paying you to charge at that charging station because it's that expensive.
Yes.
But because we're working with averages across the board, it sort of works out okay for us. But there are going to be, we've had our first customer now recently that asked us to set up the contract in such a way that there is a differential in the rate in time of use. So if you go and charge there during the peak time, you're going to pay nearly double what you would pay under normal circumstances. Mm-hmm. So I said to the client, I said, but then nobody's going to come and charge. He said, exactly. I don't want you charging here during peak time. I haven't got enough power.
Right.
But if you're desperate, well, then pay the price and it'll be fine.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I think we will see that differentiator coming into the industry.
And I suppose if you had price regulation, it would also disincentivize the construction of charging points in remote areas. On the N14 route, for example, if you can charge a higher rate for recharging your vehicle on that route, then you're more likely to build the station. However, if this price is capped, there's a good chance it won't be built.
That's right.
Yeah.
And at the end of the day, you know, I mean, everybody's aware the sort of top end of what we're looking at is what the cost of petrol is.
Mm.
So everybody's trying to stay well under that, make it feasible. And, so right now you're somewhere between, on the public rate, between half and a third of the price of petrol.
Mm.
Whereas on your home rate, you may be a fifth or a tenth of the price of petrol, depending on whether you've got solar installed at home and things like that.
Will it always be cheaper to drive an EV than a petrol car?
I believe so, absolutely, yeah.
Yeah, even with Eskom's massive price increases every year.
Yeah, but I mean, we're going to see massive price increases in fuel.
Yeah.
Didn't we see one this year? I don't know. I don't drive with petrol cars. My wife and I both have electric. No, I do know the price. But it's. And I think we're never going to see a exponential growth in price of electricity in the same way that we've seen with fuel.
Yeah.
So fuel can, you know, we have a war in Ukraine and overnight our petrol price is 70% higher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, literally that bad. Mm. Whereas electricity, we typically won't see that because you've got control over that. You know, if the electricity price was going to double, it'd be a big incentive for you to put solar in, which will halve your petrol, it will halve your energy price.
Yeah.
So strategically, I think we've got these more tools in this industry that will shape behavior and shape pricing strategies.
Yeah. Fascinating. Now, let's talk about home charging and home solutions because you do work with the OEMs as well to supply batteries and charging solutions into homes. Yeah. How popular is that proving? What are you seeing?
So definitely, I think every person who owns an EV will have a home charger.
Mm-hmm.
So, and again, we've got different deals with different OEMs. In particular, with Mercedes, we do all of their home chargers for them. So we would be both supplying the equipment for them and doing the installation at the customer's house, along with a bit of training to the customer to show them how to work with the networks and things like that. There's two categories of home chargers. So grid cars made a decision 2016-17 already, where we made the decision only to install what we would call smart connected home chargers.
Okay.
So as opposed to dumb chargers that are not smart and connected.
Right.
Okay. And the difference really comes down to if you've just got a normal charger, you're gonna connect it to your DB and it's gonna pull a certain amount of power, whatever the car is requiring. If that power is more than what your house can give, it's gonna trip the house.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll trip your main incoming breaker. A smart charger would be aware of things like that. So it could only give the power to the car that is ensuring that you're not tripping the home. But it can do more intelligent things. It can look and see, wait a minute, we're under stress in this area. Mm-hmm. You know, just generally in this particular area, Pretoria East, has got an issue and the power is under strain. So we don't want to draw too much on electric vehicles. We could then look to pulling that power down dynamically. Mm-hmm. And those would be agreements that would come in place between the municipality or between Eskom and the customer that would say, well, if you allow us a level of demand control, that if you're, that we can slow your car down at certain times or that we can charge it slower at certain times, then we might give you a more preferential rate at other times if you're charging the correct time. So we can start having these discussions, but only if you have smart chargers. You can't do that if you've got these non-connected, non-smart charging systems. So everything that we installed is a smart charging system. It's a connected charging system and will allow us to be able to integrate these systems at a later stage into more intelligent demand management systems, that we can have clever management of that. And it's not like your car will not be charged in the morning when you wake up. You know, my car, on average, I drive 70 Ks a day, one way. So, because I work here in Roodepoort and I live in Pretoria. So that would give me 140 kilometers two ways each day. And if I do all of that charging at home, it's probably about 3 hours of charging time I need and the car's full.
Yes.
In spite of the fact that it's 140 kilometers.
Yes.
So based on that, even if there was load shedding at my home, and I've got solar, so I don't really have to worry too much about load shedding, but if I had to worry about load shedding, then even when there's load shedding, I still get 3 hours during the night to charge the car. It's never that bad.
Yeah.
Hasn't got that bad yet.
Not yet.
But not yet. and that to me is the idea, is that the car is always full. I just love this idea that when I wake up in the morning, I get in my car, it's full. I don't have to worry about fuel or energy.
Yeah.
It's just there.
And your car is driving on sunlight.
And it's driving on sunshine as far as possible, of course.
That is an issue, I suppose, that many people want to charge their EVs at night when the sun is not shining. Is there a way around that? I mean, can you put big batteries down in your house?
Then you need batteries.
You transfer from one battery to another battery.
That's exactly. And the idea is that batteries are going to benefit your house anyway.
Yes.
Because it's going to give you much more resilience to being off grid or being independent of the grid.
Yeah.
It's going to allow you to leverage or load shift that solar from the daytime to the nighttime.
Yeah.
Batteries, that's the way to go. It does work out quite expensive to put batteries down at home. But as I say, this is part of that next phase. And as batteries, with all of these things, you know, we're looking and saying, we're watching the price of electric vehicles drop against the price of petrol vehicles climbing. This crossover point coming. Maybe 2023, in my mind. But we see the same with battery technology. You might look and say, oh, but it's a bit expensive for the electricity in the battery. Yeah, but every year that's going down. Every year the grid-connected energy is going up. There's a crossover point coming. And, you know, where you invest and how you use that is really up to you.
I just saw an item on the Newswire, literally 5 minutes before you joined us in studio here, saying that lithium prices have hit a new record high. They've tripled or quadrupled in the last few months.
Okay.
How much of a problem is this?
So I'm not a geologist, but generally we find lithium in salt pans. And pretty much every time we've looked in a salt pan, we found lithium.
Okay.
So I think it really
is. There's
a lot of it around. And I think there is, if we were to mine our salt pans here in South Africa, and we've got some really nice big ones, there'd be very strict environmental control on how we can do that. I think other countries, maybe some of our neighbors that have done this very successfully in the last 20 or 30 years and have become big lithium producers, don't have that level of environmental responsibility. So they might have gone to a level of destruction within those salt pans, which is not good for the environment. Whereas in South Africa, it would be very strictly controlled. And I think that's probably the reason why it hasn't been exploited yet. But economics. So as the value of lithium goes up, and then the need, there'll be more people looking. The people will start saying, okay, where do we search over here for it? Ah, there we go. We've got a great big salt pan. Okay, what's the environmental agreement? This is how we're going to extract lithium over here. And I think we'll manage it.
We'll get through this.
You know, over the next 10 years, maybe other technologies will come up. I don't think there's anything big. There's lots of people talking about these nuclear diamond batteries, but they're microwatts. You know, it's not, they're good for pacemakers.
Okay.
You know, they're not going to be good for driving electric cars. Right. Not yet. So maybe we will see some of these sort of other battery technologies coming through. But I think for the foreseeable future, we need to be, you know, back in a lithium-based battery technology.
Great. Winston, before I let you go, I just want to get a view from you of where we're going. What is the charging network in South Africa going to look like in 5 years from now? And what is it going to look like in the home? We're quite far behind in terms of regulations compared to Europe and the US and other developed markets. But I imagine a future where I have solar at home, I'm feeding that electricity back into the grid, I'm earning credits from feeding that into the grid that I could then use to charge my car at a charging station down the line. So I'm almost taking that green energy and from my house and putting it into a charging station somewhere else.
So can I take some notes quickly? That was brilliant. Well done. So, yeah, I think we're heading to a time where there is going to be some really interesting value adds. In other words, where you can behave in a certain way and that would give you credit in another area. Mm. And energy is so easy to do that. You know, whereas in working with petrol, it's hard because it's something you can only get in one place. Whereas saying electricity, we can be trading it all over the place. Mm. You know, we're talking to some bank and or banks, and the discussions are around how do they use their incentive systems to drive that behavior, and can they use those incentives to say if you use in a particular way, you might get a particular type of award from your bank, and those awards can then be used to shape your behavior. So absolutely, we'll see a lot of that. I think that homes will more and more use solar, maybe not. I don't think it's going to be driven as much by Eskom as just by it's the right way to do it. And it's the most valuable thing to do. Yes, Eskom helps that, you know, if they're having trouble with certain areas. You make your own electricity at home for your car now, and therefore you're taking control of that part of your drive. Charging infrastructure in the public space, I think, especially when you start having these you know, stacked residential homes, then suddenly that becomes not as easy to do home charging. Yeah. Now you're always going to be doing public charging. Mm-hmm. So I think we'd see within those estates, and we are seeing within those estates, they do very good deals for their customers. So they're not charging the normal public rate that we'd see outside of those estates. But if I come from outside, I pay the normal public rate mm-hmm. because I'm now a guest in those sites. So I think we're going to see things like that coming through. Generally, our network is relatively extensive as it stands, except for N14, not yet. But it is typically single or double charges at each site. So we've got a little bit of a risk that, you know, if you're unlucky and you get to a site and there is load shedding or, you know, both charges are not working. So we've always tried to put two at every site. Mm-hmm. But the idea would be that you are going to be in trouble because the next one might be 200 kilometers away.
Yes.
What we need to see is density. We need to start expanding the density of those charging stations. So, and more we're starting to see that, you know. So now around Colesberg, you've got three options for charging your cars. So if any one charger was down for load shedding or for maintenance or for whatever.
Or there's a queue.
There's a queue. Then there are other places. Mm-hmm. You know, we're seeing queuing at some of the shopping centers. We got a beautiful picture the other day, four cars. So two on the charger. And two standing waiting to be charged.
Oh, wow.
And first time we've seen that, and that's a good indication that we need to start looking at putting a second charger at those sites and starting to expand those to support those environments. Mm-hmm. So I think we're in a good place. I think we've started off right. It's really now about getting vehicles on the road, and it's about people understanding that this is real. We have the future of driving is without any doubt going to be electric. You know, the rate at which we transition to electric is probably more in our hands in terms of where we're going to go. But I think that really, really is important that we start to understand that this is where the future is going. So you're choosing to either be an early adopter or a late adopter, but you're not looking to say, I'm not going to do it now because I'm not sure that it's going to happen. Mm. This is going to happen. Mm-hmm. It's really just about when do you enter that space and when do you become part of that revolution?
When do you think it becomes a mass market thing in South Africa?
I think we're about to, and we're on camera, so now it's going to be put down forever and somebody will come back
I won't hold you to
5 years time and say, he was wrong.
Someone else might, but I won't.
So I think we're 2 to 3 years away from seeing price parity on pretty much all vehicles. That said, today already a lot of the vehicles are at price parity with their competitors mm-hmm. or with their fuel competing vehicles.
Sure.
The problem is that most of the vehicles are the more expensive vehicles. So I think, again, 2 to 3 years, we should see it creeping down into the lower end market.
Yep.
So the sub 500,000 rand vehicles. And if we get price parity at that level in 3 years, I think that's the game changer. Mm-hmm. So that's where we'll see the big pivot in the market. I think the other big pivot is when Europe hits 100% of EVs. So they're saying 2030 to 2032. Is 100% of new vehicles will be electric. It's very soon. And when that happens, people have often said, but Africa will just be 10 years behind. Well, it's pretty difficult to be 10 years behind where all the cars that you buy come from Europe and now they're only making electric cars. Mm-hmm. So I think we're going to see two steps. 3 years' time, we're going to see the step where, it's now at price parity, so many people will buy into it. and 2030 to 2033, where you just can't get petrol cars anymore. Yeah. They just stop. And then the next big transition is going to be when people start looking and saying, you drive a petrol car? Really? And people are going to start to feel the pressure to get rid of their petrol cars. But you will want to because it's costing you a fortune.
Yeah.
You know, it'll be costing you, if you had a 10,000 rand petrol bill, the guy with the electric car's only got a 1,000 rand electricity bill.
Yeah.
You know, there's an economic reason to move.
The taxes on petrol are going to do this.
Yeah. All of these things will change. Yeah. And so I honestly think we'll see multiple of these things. Just don't miss them, because if you get in too late, you're going to get caught with the petrol car that you can't sell.
Yeah. Winston, it sounds like you're going to have a fascinating few years ahead of you. This industry is on the cusp of massive change and massive growth. Thank you for coming into our studio, talking to Tech Central today.
Pleasure.
Winston Yordan is MD of Gridcars. Thank you for your time.
It's been lovely. Thank you so much.
Thank you.